Welcome to the Iron Basketball Podcast, the Pick and Roll Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Harper. Matt Moore, as Tara Reid says, you can find love everywhere, even in an ice cream. And she's got a picture of herself with, I would assume, is one of those, like, I can't remember what they're called, but they've got, like, the caramel in the middle of the cone. And, yeah, that's what's going on with Tara Reid.
Are you pro-cone?
I love the cone. I like a sugar cone.
Yeah, I have to be in the mood for a waffle cone. I tend to go, I do like the soft serve sugar cone. That's a good look.
Yeah, I'm not. Yeah, soft serve sugar cone, or even just a good old scoop of vanilla ice cream on a sugar cone. Like, I'm all about. But the waffle cone is oddly enough, it seems like it's either a weird texture or it's a little too sweet as opposed to the sugar cone, which sounds really stupid. But there is something about it where you do have to be like, there has to be the right mixture of everything for me to like be all about the waffle cone.
I do like the fact that the sugar cone typically has the flat bottom, so you can set it down.
Oh yeah, very convenient.
I think that's a game changer.
Yeah, definitely a game changer. And also, in more Tara Reid news, Sharknado 3 has already been greenlit by Sci-Fi. 2 is not even out, but 3's coming.
They are riding that money.
Oh my god! I'm just handing all of my money over to them, and I don't even know how I do that because I think it's just included in my cable package.
What if like this becomes the actual next major action franchise, because action films have been going downhill? So it goes from like the Die Hard series to the Fast and Furious series to the Sharknado series.
I will somehow believe or convince myself that I'm secretly running the entertainment industry if this happens.
I don't think that'll be hard for you.
No, I can easily trick myself into thinking that. You know what's on its way out?
What?
Mike D'Antoni with the Lakers.
Don't take – I said this morning on a video that we're not going to run. The lesson here, kids, don't take jobs when you're on painkillers. Don't. That's the lesson. Don't take jobs when you're on painkillers.
It's not ideal. I have so many mixed feelings about D'Antoni. Like, I feel like he got a raw deal with the Lakers because there were so many injuries. Like, how, I don't even know how often – did he even get a chance to play with – a healthy Nash, Kobe, Powell, Dwight in the first season?
Yeah, they looked it up last night because Nate Jones was making noise about it. They played 15 games together.
15 games. Okay, so not huge, but a little bit. They got a little bit out of that. And then this year was just that was just a feces fest. Like
regardless of like I make the Nick Young jokes all the time, but I mean, let's be honest, Xavier Henry wound up being their primary offensive weapon for much of the season. Like, that's a bad sign.
That's not great. It's just not great. And so, no, D'Antoni wasn't good, but I don't think he was bad either. Like, he did what he could with what he had, and they screwed up the first season, but that was, I don't know, that's just such a chaotic thing to take over not mid-season, but into the season, that it's hard for me to really, like, kill a guy over that, but I guess you can kill him over he didn't handle relationships with Powell correctly, with Dwight correctly, and maybe even Kobe to a degree. I mean, as like we all say, like, oh, there's an Italian connection with these guys, which Italian Connection is one of my favorite Audrey Hepburn movies, just to let you know. But there's an Italian connection with these guys, so they must like each other, but I don't get the sense that they actually like each other.
Well, I don't get the sense that Kobe likes anyone.
That's
so
true. That's a good point.
The list is his daughters and Fish. That's it.
Yeah.
Which
you're not talking about Derek Fisher. You're talking about the band Fish. Huge Fish
right.
fan.
Huge Fish head. Bouncing around the room. Kobe's jam. Yeah. I wonder if this is going to be a situation where they had Phil Jackson and they thought they could do better and they were wrong. And then they had Mike Brown and they thought that they could do better and then they wound up not necessarily being wrong or right. And then they had D'Antoni. I wonder, they think that they're pretty sure they can do better. And I wonder, because their list of candidates is pretty concerning to me.
Yeah, Steve Kerr is like the oh, they could steal him from the Knicks, right?
That's my idea. No one else is saying that. That's just me being like, how can we make Thanksgiving dinner at the bus house more awkward?
I mean, that is it. That's incentive enough for Jim Buss. Like, maybe you become a good team again, maybe you don't, but let's at least make Thanksgiving really awkward.
Yeah. Like, it would just be great. Oh, you took the Knicks job, did you? Did you want the Lakers job? Yeah, no. Oh, you were gonna hire Steve? No, we're the Lakers. Thanks.
Pass the gravy.
I think it'd be amazing. Somebody said that Steve would never do it because he's loyal to Jackson. That makes sense.
Yeah.
But that would be ideal. The three names I hear bandied about the most are Messina.
Sure.
Byron Scott. Uh-huh.
Yeah, okay.
And Lionel Hollins.
Lionel's a good coach, so I could see Lionel. But I don't – I mean, are
can
you going to
– Can I go ahead and just – Get, let me peel back the curtain for our listeners. Last night, I'm not on the list. I'm not in the know. I would bet all the money in my pockets against all the money in your pockets that Lionel Hollins' agent started making calls last night to say, boy, you know, they're going to take a good long look at Lionel Hollins.
Yeah.
Because that's, you know, and I think it was Darius Soriano of Foreign Blue and Gold who said, looks like everybody wants part of that $1.2 billion Time Warner Cable deal.
Well, also, Lionel Hollins has been mentioned for the Wolves job a little bit too, and it, like, that just doesn't make sense to me.
Oh man, if you want to just go, if you're like, well, let's just expedite the process of Kevin Love leaving, that's who you hire in that
right,
situation.
Exactly.
This has always been the fascinating dynamic, and I actually just – I only found this out last year. Because I assumed during the whole process that, oh, like the grit grind thing, like they really bought into what the coach was selling and they all loved each other. And the reality is the players in Memphis kind of realized, oh, we can really win this way. And they bought in and they trusted Hollins and they liked Hollins from the perspective of, I want to play for him because we're successful. But if you kind of dig a little bit, it's not like those guys were like, I love Lionel Hollins. He's like a dad to me. It was, I want to kill him half the time, but we win a lot of games, and I make a lot of money. Like, that's more the dynamic. So I'm not sure that – and he was hard on guys that do play defense, so I'm not sure how he's going to react to if he were to go to L.A. playing with some of those – having some of those guys playing for him, especially if they re-sign Powell. And I don't know how he would react to going to Minnesota with Love, even though I think Love's made a lot of strides. I don't think he'd ever be able to do enough to make Hollins happy.
No, he's made strides, but there are still plenty of inconsistencies where one of those guys is going to die.
Yeah. Like,
that's just the only option. I, you know, the Messina, what is it, Ettore Messina?
Yeah.
I don't mind that. He seems to be respected. I don't know. It's always so hard to figure out how assistant coaches would be, especially, you know, he's a European coach. He was there for a little bit, but the organization does seem to like him. I don't have a problem with that, mainly because you don't have a plan anyway. Like, your plan is, oh, let's hope guys come here. So you kind of have a year to figure out whether or not he's a good head coach. And maybe, God, if only they had had a shot at Steve Clifford at some point. If only they had had access to hiring Steve Clifford. If only he had been like an assistant on that staff some point over the years. That would have been the hire to have.
Literally said to me, I would have been happy to stay in L.A. Literally said to me, I would have been happy to stay in L.A.
Yeah.
And honestly, that wouldn't, you know, that wouldn't be a bad plan for them, and realistically, is just to offer Clifford an absurd amount of money and offer the Bobcats a first-round pick. Not this year, but another
right.
year.
Right,
I wouldn't,
a future first-round pick.
I think that would be I think the Bobcats might have to listen to it. I think they'd probably say no just because they'd have to be like, do you know how long it took us to find someone who's competent?
Right.
We've been through like 9 guys in 6 years.
What if you offer up a first and Xavier Henry? Oh.
Right. Oh yeah, that sold. Done. Come on. You gotta have somebody who was good in college in order for Jordan to jump at it.
Oh.
I think if Messina were to come back, there's a good chance. And I'm not just saying this because of the European connection, just because of the play style. I think that they would probably look to re-sign Powell, and that would make a lot of sense.
Yeah.
I think Kobe would be happy with that decision. That's a big factor here, is you're going to have to do something to make Kobe happy. That's
– Yeah, because you're not – I mean, especially for next season. You're not going to win next season. Like, they're just –
Well, you're not
going to
win next season. And with Phil Jackson going to New York, you know, he's going to be pissed about that. And if you start losing and he doesn't have a guy that he's bought into, I think it's going to be bad anyway. I think no matter who you hire, unless you're able to make a major move this summer, which, you know, I keep being like, they've pulled stuff out of their ass before. Why
sure.
can't they do it again?
Yeah, sure. No, that they could definitely do it. I just think they're going to have to. I think they'll be patient. Like, I really do. Like, I mean, I could be wrong about that, but I see them, like, give Powell $12 million for next season. You know, like, what's the harm in that? He didn't want to play for D'Antoni. I think he'd come back if Kobe wants him back, which Kobe seems to want him back. You know, they have a good enough relationship. Like, I could see him coming back for 1 year, $12 million. And there's not really a problem with that because, like, I just don't think you're going to make enough big moves next year to truly matter in that Western Conference.
Yeah. I'm not going to lie to you. I have had a terrifying thought that they offer the Grizzlies a sign-and-trade with Pau Gasol for Zebo.
Ooh.
I don't think that Memphis management would go for it. I like to think that they're smarter than that. And I mean, I believe that they're smarter than that, but they're so focused on contract stuff that they were able to be like, we can shed some money and we get Pau. I think that they might talk themselves into it, and I'm going to hate that if they do that.
I actually kind of want that to happen.
You go from grit grind to
tapas.
To feet grinded up like deli meat.
And stuffed into a cheese-filled date.
And exactly. And Zebo's not a good defender, but Zebo's a good fouler. And I like that about him.
Good fouler ends possessions with rebounding.
Yeah.
Yeah, he just fits in so well. Like, you never look at a game with him and think, like, oh, he's getting killed on defense, he's a liability, right? Like, he finds a way to defend. He's not a good defender, but he finds a way to get in the way.
That's extremely accurate. Byron Scott is maybe the most likely one, because that guy called into Sportsnet last night to say he's interested.
What a terrible, terrible decision that would be.
Former Laker, tough defensive coach.
What about Kurt Rambis? Throw him out there.
That's going to be a name. It'll get leaked by somebody.
Yeah.
I mean, he's already there. It's a Laker guy. It's a Phil guy. You know, especially if Rambis is like, I'm going to take us back to the triangle. And Kobe's like, ooh. And I'm going to be like, and who's your third guy? It's going to be Powell and Kobe and Xavier Henry? Is that the three-way combo? Is Xavier Henry your Pippen now? Is that the plan?
Oh, they got Wes Johnson. What's Johnson's Pippen like? They both have arms.
Yeah, I don't know that there's a good plan. I don't know that there's a reliable plan, you might say.
Oh. I mean, are they as unreliable as Kevin Durant? I've heard he's Mr. Unreliable.
I'm so mad as a Memphis fan. I'm so mad.
Oh,
I'm
man.
So pissed because I'm just like, this is going to work. I know this is going to work.
It's brilliant in two ways. One, it's selling papers and getting a reaction. Whether it's a bad reaction, whether people are laughing at it and saying it's a joke. At this point, like, there's that whole, you know, bad publicity is not really all that bad, you know? Like, as long as they're talking about you, that's a good thing. And sometimes that's what the newspaper business needs. So it fulfills that. And then if Durant just destroys the Grizzlies tonight because of that, that's a win too, because then you get to cover, oh, look at this incredible, like, he stepped up when we called him out kind of thing. And then you just pat yourself on the back.
And Durant gets to do the whole, yeah, like, this smart, like, this just shows you what the media is, and meanwhile the rest of the media is like, we would never say this. We would never say this.
After a full day of the media laughing at such a thing.
Yeah, I do like the reaction from every single writer on the East Coast who is like, I mean, they are laughing literally at Oklahoma and being like, you guys don't want him. Bring him on out. That's fine.
Yeah. We would love to turn on him in a couple of years.
It's been – this series has been – well, one, it's been way different than what I envisioned. And two, it's been kind of weird to see – no, it hasn't been weird. I'll take that back. It's been entirely too predictable that – we didn't think – basically, you and I came into the series and we both agreed the same thing, which was, well, there's no way that Tony Allen's going to be able to bother Durant because he's ascended to a higher level of existence.
Right.
Problem is that Tony Allen has a device by which he can rip through holes in the space-time fabric to other dimensions and has still somehow managed to do that and find a way to crawl up Kevin Durant's ass and play him like a puppet.
Which should be a foul.
That would be Royce Young's contention. Yesterday in Royce's column on Daily Thunder about about the situation, about how Durant needs to step up. Like, this is his time, and you got to trust that he'll do it. It was funny. Royce wrote this whole thing yesterday about how you have to trust in Durant because he's been the guy for you, and then the Oklahoman turns around and does Mr. Unreliable.
Gee, there's one of those I would read.
But Royce dropped basically he's been really hounded by Tony Allen, comma, with no respite from the officials. And I was like, well done, Royce. Just slip that in there. Like, yeah, he's really struggled. It's been a foul, but...
I mean, I think Tony Allen is getting away with some stuff.
Murder.
But in the same respect, like, if they're allowing that and they're allowing it consistently... Like, I get that it's frustrating you, and people want that to be a foul, and it's a foul against other guys. Why isn't it a foul here? If it's not a foul and it's consistently not a foul, you have to adjust. You just do. Like, that's why I never like blaming officials. I'm not saying Royce is doing that, but I never like blaming officials for games, because if there is at least some consistency there, or if there's not consistency and you don't know what the hell's going on, it's still on you as a team, as a player, whatever, to adjust to the situation. Like, you wouldn't just keep driving into the... Well, okay, some guys do. You wouldn't just keep driving into four guys all the time, throwing up a shot and saying, you know, and saying, well, one of these is going to go in, so it's a good idea. No, you adjust. You see what the defense is doing. You see what the flow of the game is. And you find a way to adapt to that. And Durant just hasn't really adapted. I don't know what he can do. But it seemed like he didn't have any problem during the regular season doing it to every defender in the league, right? Like, that was the ascension. It was like, oh my God, there's literally nothing you can do to stop him. He's scoring 40 points a game. He's scoring 30 points for so many straight games, or 25 points for so many straight games. Like, look at this record-breaking season. And then the playoffs came, and he just reverted to that, oh, Tony Allen's in my head game. And I don't... some of these are fouls, but they're not calling it. So adjust.
Yeah, I get mad mostly when I get mad at inconsistencies when they call it one way on one end of the floor and not the other. But certainly, in general, I totally agree with you. Like, it's a lot of it that they're struggling with, honestly, is that the Grizzlies are busting screens, and part of that's on the Thunder.
Yes.
Now, they did try and get more aggressive, and then Serge Ibaka got called for three illegal screens in the last game, so I'm not sure what they're going to do. But that's been the biggest problem, is they're busting the screen every single time. He can't – they have – this has been one of the things that I think has been lost. They have legitimately tried to get Kevin Durant in catch-and-shoot situations. They've legitimately tried to free him off the dribble in high-percentage looks coming off of a pick. The Grizzlies are just blowing it up. They're just – busting that screen every time without fouling, or maybe they are not getting called. And that's really been the big problem. And a lot of it, and I got to say this, and Royce is adamantly against this. He thinks that Durant's in his own head. Tony's in there. I don't know how. I didn't think it was possible. I really thought Durant had gone beyond this, but Allen is in his cerebral cortex. He's got a monkey wrench, and he's just pulling stuff out. It's like a kid that pries open a VCR or something that's not completely dated, a DVR, and is just like, oh, cool. I mean, it's in his head, and you can tell. Yeah. I guess, well, you can't tell. It seems to me by his body language that it is.
I think there's room for both those guys up there. I think he's in his head because Tony's in his head, you know, and it just leads to a snowball effect, and they're just you know. Maybe it's got to be, you got to get Durant out in transition or get him some easy buckets, get him some dunks, and then he can kind of snap himself out of that. Like, there's got to be something. It doesn't help that Westbrook has shot so poorly in the series. It doesn't help that none of those guys are, you know, none of the complimentary guys are stepping up, aside from Reggie Jackson in one game. By the way, a game they won. It's just this perfect storm of, like, they're relying so much on these two guys who aren't performing up to snuff, but then they're not allowing other guys to come into it and help. And, you know, Serge Ibaka has kind of been the best player in the series for the Thunder, right? I mean, he's at least been the most reliable. And I
might argue that Serge Ibaka has been the best player in the series overall.
Yeah, he might be. I mean, he's been fantastic, but they're not. It just doesn't feel like they're using the same safety valve for him. They're not running a ton of stuff away from the ball to get guys open. Like, it's just, hey, we're gonna ride these two guys, which can work. It certainly can work. It might work, but there needs to be there's just not enough balance in the series for the Thunder, and that's kind of what the Grizzlies do to you, right? Like, they blow up your spot, they blow up what you want to do offensively, and they make you force it, and the Thunder are forcing it, and it's not working out.
it's been kind of funny because essentially the Grizzlies' whole thing was, okay, well, we're going to make sure, you know, we're going to let Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook feast and they can do whatever they want, but we're going to shut down everybody else. And then Westbrook and Durant didn't feast either.
Right, yeah.
And yet they're only winning – they're only – like the Grizzlies after four games or after five games with a 3-2 lead are plus 1.4 per 100 possessions.
Yeah. And my God, if we go to another overtime tonight.
They're going to kill me. I mean, I was on a plane the last time, and so luckily I missed the terrible – fall apart, blew the 20-point lead.
Right.
Because that might have done it. But I'm watching on DirecTV on the plane, at Tip Frontier, and they go to halftime show. And they're like, oh, let's do a look-in. This is the final play. And I was like, oh, my God, okay. And Durant takes that 30-foot three.
Oh, my God.
And then Ibaka tips it in or puts it back up and in, and the people next to me thought I was insane because I literally like threw my cap into my mouth and was starting to eat my own cap.
And then you were restrained and put in the back of the plane.
Yeah. I mean, I made some sort of – apparently I made some sort of really weak whimper noise, like, ah, and in the back of my throat. And then they said no. And then there was a, yeah, as I'm trying to act like I'm yawning. Like, yeah, oh, so tired on this long flight. Hmm. He as much as Grizzlies fans don't want me to say this kind of stuff, just drive, Durant. Just take the ball and go to the rim, and they will foul you every single time.
Yeah, yeah. I there is too much reliance on the jump shot right now.
Well, I get why, because to a degree he's got to be like, I'm the best shooter in the world outside of Steph, like the best scorer in the world. I should, you know, I can. I've got looks. That's the other thing is Royce is right in this, that Durant's missing open looks.
Yeah, he is. He really is.
I still think they win tonight.
The Thunder?
Yeah.
Yeah, it kind of feels that way, and I don't know why it feels that way, but it just feels like this series is destined to go seven. And I honestly, like, I'm always someone who's like, all right, I'll take the home team as long as they're healthy in a game seven. I don't know that I would feel that way if it goes seven. I don't think the Grizzlies care about home court.
Here's a number for you. Gary Neal in four games drove 23 times. Kevin Durant in five has driven 19 times.
That doesn't seem like a lot.
Westbrook has done it 48 times.
Jesus.
And he's shooting 50% on them, so it's not a terrible percentage. But yeah, Kevin Durant has driven with the ball 19 times.
God.
Vince Carter's done it 27. Stephen Curry's done it 30.
Curry never drives.
Beno Udrih's done it 15 times. Beno Udrih has gone to the rack two fewer times than Kevin Durant. And like, he's playing. Durant's playing 48.5 minutes a game. Think about that, by the way. That's what he's averaging in the series. Is 48.5. Beno's averaging 15. Per game, and he's driven two fewer times.
Well, also, look at the shooting area for him. Durant shooting 77% in the restricted area. I'm guessing a lot of those are dunks, right? But yeah. 77%. In the paint, non-restricted area, 34%. But that's not a great shot for a lot of guys anyway. Mid-range, 34%. Corner three, 33%. Above the break three, 28%. Like, when he's at the basket, he's fantastic.
And, I mean, they're funneling him to help, which deters you. But I guess the idea is, oh, well, this is making it harder for me. But I'm also like, they're going to foul you. They're going to foul you every time. They can't help but foul you. This is Memphis. They are foul magnets.
Right.
And then if you pick up three on Gasol in the first half, he's done until you can pick it. You can get Gasol into five by the end of the third easy.
Oh, definitely.
Easy.
And with Durant, like, it, you know, in the regular season – or in this series, his made field goals are 60% of them are assisted. So they're getting him the ball, but in the regular season, it was, you know, 52% were unassisted. So, like, he was clearly going about it himself. Now, he can't just do that against Tony Allen, but like you're saying, like, drive to the basket. Like, that's where that's going to come. If the jumper's not there and you can't get proper space to feel it, and then when you do have proper space, you're so out of rhythm. Like, go to the basket, get layups, get fouls, get free throws, do all of that stuff. And I know it's easier to say it than to do it, and he's got the entire, you know, what would Memphis, the fourth best defensive rating this year? Or the third best, something like that. Like, he's got a great defense that is keying in on him, but what's happening is not working. So you have to go somewhere else.
We'll see if they can adjust. If they lose, where are you at on Scott Brooks?
I don't think he needs to be fired. I think that's an overreaction. I think so much of the game and so much of his coaching job is outside of his of what he gets criticized for. And so I just like, yeah, he doesn't seem to be a great in-game manager. He doesn't seem to be, you know, to draw up great plays when they need a bucket. But that's not all what coaching is. So I think if they decide to roll with him as a coach, I think it's a good decision. If they decide to fire him and they get a better coach, I think that's a good decision. I don't think you need a coaching change just to change. But hell, if they could get Stan Van Gundy, like, of course that's a great decision. You know, even if they got George Karl, that's a great decision to me. Like I have no problem with them making a change as long as it's the right change. But I don't think a change is necessary.
Yeah, I went on a rant about this on Twitter yesterday. I just can't, you know, it's results oriented, and I'm not big on that. If you're gonna take results, let's take the overall results, which is this has been a 57 plus win team 3 years in a row. They've been to the NBA Finals, they've been to the Western Conference Finals. They got basically scuttled last year by Westbrook's freak injury. They likely would have at least advanced to Memphis, and you can make the argument maybe they would beat him. I don't think so, because Memphis wasn't as good last year. Because what's killing them, I didn't think that Memphis had made enough adjustments in terms of their personnel year over year, because the numbers didn't say they did. Adding Mike Miller and Courtney Lee changed a whole lot.
Even if you have the threat of spreading the floor, whether they hit or not, I mean, that threat, like, just gets in the mind of the defense.
The Memphis offense is still horrible. They've just managed to make it just a little bit less horrible than what they make you.
Right.
And that's probably not a sustainable plan for victory, but it's working out big if they do. I mean, it's also crazy because you're looking at, all right, so Memphis can knock off this team. If the Clippers advance or Golden State advances, I think you have to like Memphis in either of those matchups based off of history. Now, I could very easily see the Clippers destroying them because they are a much better team than they were last year. But Memphis is at least going to have a chance.
Right.
That's what's crazy is I went from thinking that Memphis, like, oh, they made it in the playoffs, they didn't get the 8th seed, I'm happy with that. You know, they'll get knocked out first round, no big deal. And now I'm like, it's not inconceivable they can make the Western Conference Finals again.
Right.
Which, hey, I didn't want them to play the Spurs, and they'll probably end up doing that. but yeah, so I just – can we talk for a second about this first round? We haven't had a chance to kind of look at it.
I am making sweet love to it. I love it.
Do you remember when you and I were like, oh, well, the good thing about the NBA is that the best team always wins?
Yeah, that's somewhat true still.
And even though, and it's weird because you can then, after the results are over, you talk yourself into it. Like, even now, I'm like, oh, well, no, like, the Wizards really were the better team. And I'm thinking, like, that team drove me crazy for half the year with just being stupid.
Yeah.
They just knocked off one of the, when I say favorites, I don't mean favorite to win, just favorites among media. And I wrote about this yesterday about how we all talked ourselves into the idea of the Bulls. And the reality of the Bulls was much, much more sad.
Yeah, in a way, and this is not a great comparison, but it's what popped in my head. In a way, like, we kept waiting for the Spurs to fall apart, right? Like, for years it's been, all right, this year they're getting too old. Like, it's not going to happen. And it just never happened. And with the Bulls, it felt like, all right, now we can count them out, and they were never counted. You know, they would always bounce back at least one step further than we believed they could get to. So it just kind of became that same mindset of, well, yeah, they're screwed, but they're resilient, so they'll come through. And that was literally the only reason I picked them against the Wizards. It's like, I know if I count out the Bulls that they're just going to step up for that one annoying series and extend it by one round, and that's going to be that. And that's not an analytical way to look at look at basketball. Like, it's crazy that we thought that and that I thought that. Like, that's crazy. That's a crazy way to think about basketball, because it's so much more complicated than that. But another funny thing about that series is I've had a lot of Wizards fans like, oh, do you still think Randy Whitman is a terrible coach? Yes, I do.
Yes.
I very much do. Do you want him to get a long-term extension with the team? Like, if you answer that yes, then fair enough. But nobody wants that. I feel like they're winning in spite of him. Not that he's done a bad job in that series. He's gotten them ready to play, and they've been good enough in making enough adjustments to make it happen. But to me, like, that's John Wall doing stuff. Like John Wall didn't hit shots in that series. I think he hit, like, 36% of his shots. But I thought he played phenomenally well.
If Nene played like this during the regular season, they're winning 50 games.
Oh, yeah, they're the 3 seed.
You know, this... But I'll tell you what I'm most happy about with the Wizards, Trevor Booker.
Yeah, oh my God, that dude is so fun.
Love that guy for years, and to see him do this on that stage, it's just fantastic.
Timberwolves had him briefly on draft night before they traded him for Lazar Hayward. I can't remember how that worked out, but...
You really need to go back and just put together an all players the Wolves drafted, or drafted and traded team.
Oh, I mean, God. Whether it was designed before the pick was made or not, like, it's just kind of stunning.
Just incredible. And it's, you know, you can't hold them responsible for that. And there's lots of guys that have done that, but still, like, yeah. It would be pretty amazing. Yeah. One more note on the Bulls. I look back and I go, I really seriously thought that the team with the worst effective field goal percentage in the league was going to win a 7-game series in a sport in which the entire directive is to shoot the ball.
It's kind of crazy, right?
But then you look around, and I mean, we're looking at a very real possibility that the 1 seed goes down to East tonight.
Yeah.
Very real possibility.
I just wrote about it, how the way to prevent that is for them to go heavy with David West. Like, I think you have to ride David West. He's the one advantage they have, regardless of the game, of the matchup. Like, he's just been so good, but they don't use him enough, and I think that's the only way to do it for them. And it's crazy that, like, what was he this year? Maybe their third leading scorer? Maybe he was their second leading scorer still. But he's not a guy that's, like, a go-to guy anymore. And yet, like, it feels like David West is the only way the Pacers save their series. And that's insane.
And for me, it comes down to, I'm not kidding. I would go on defense, small ball with Copeland at center, and tell Copeland, just block or foul every time they drive.
Yeah.
And just set up, it would be like a hockey shootout, basically. Where as long as you keep them from shooting threes, they can drive, but then you're just basically daring them to get over your bigs.
Right.
And I would go with Copeland, and I would tell them, no matter what, you have to prevent the three. That is everyone's talking about Indiana struggles on offense and all this other stuff. I am just telling you, if they prevent the three ball, that they've already won this series if they were able to lock down on three, and they just haven't done it. They have not been able to keep the Hawks off of the 3-point line. And that's how they're – and credit the hell out of Mike Budenholzer for just being like, oh, they don't want us to shoot threes. Let's shoot a metric ton of them. Let's just bomb. Let's just shoot – we don't even care about the percentage. I would just rather – don't look for a good shot. Just look for a three. It's a remarkable coaching adjustment to completely destroy that defense.
It's great. During the regular season, they shot 26 a game. 25.6 a game. In the playoffs, they're shooting 30.2 a game in terms of attempts from three-point range. And they've increased their percentage by almost 3%.
They have to shoot, I think, over 30, and the series has to go 7. For them to break it, but they're still within range of breaking the record for most in a playoff series.
Yeah.
The record's 203, and they're at I think they're at 145-ish. So, just, man. The Hawks, of all people. And by the way, is it weird to you that now, like, the Hawks are starting, like, there's a little bit of it, and most of this is within our little insular basketball Twitter community, but with Robbie and Bo being as good of guys on Twitter as they are, and being phenomenal writers, they just released the new adjusted Pac-Man logo.
Oh, it's great.
They've got a new CEO who's in charge of stuff. Are the Hawks kind of becoming cool a little bit?
A little bit. Like, it's because they have enough of a cool old school vibe with, like, Dominique Wilkins, the fact that he's still involved heavily. Like, you can draw back on, like, hey, we used to be cool, now look at us. And they play an updated style of basketball that's 3-point oriented, and people can really get behind shooters who are hot all the time, and they've got flexibility to do stuff and this is all without their best player.
And also playoff Teague. It's like the ultimate validation for me.
It's become a thing. It's become a thing. Like, he's been fantastic.
I mean, we've already talked about the other two series. You want to go ahead and talk about the late game?
Yeah, let's do that.
So So it's been a week. You and I haven't talked. It's been a week with the Clippers.
I know something happened with them.
Gonna miss you, Donald. Gonna miss you so much. And by miss you, I mean not at all. I cannot stand. I've been writing about that guy. Ziller turned me on to him in terms of how awful he is back in 2006. And since then, whenever I've written for any sort of publication, whenever he's done something reprehensible, I've written about it. And I know you talked about it with Ethan, but man, Silver went nuclear.
Yeah, he did. We talked about it with Ethan, talked about it with Dan Wyke, but there's still more to talk about. I mean, that's the thing. Like, it's not over, right? Like, it's just beginning.
I've got a column. I have to use column. I have a post coming out today that talks about the impact of the players' union and how this actually kind of represents a shift in the dynamic. Ryan Windhorst kind of touched on it from the perspective of Silver essentially acted as like the uniter on this issue and brought the players' union in. And the players' union is thrilled with Adam Silver right now. And this is like the first time the players' union has been thrilled with the commissioner ever. So it's a substantial move, but it also – there's a lot of moving pieces for this in terms of how it's going to affect the 2017 CBA. And there's a lot of really complicated racial components with it. The most important thing is that Sterling's gone, and that's something everybody can celebrate. But it's going to be really interesting to see how this plays out. I'm really interested to see the vote as well. I have a feeling Cuban's going to vote no.
Yeah. Because he does – like, obviously, you become a billionaire, you become that powerful, like – you don't like you feel like you can kind of withstand anything, right? In terms of backlash, like you have that ego which has helped you become so successful, and it's, you know, it's both a good and a bad thing. I could see Cuban kind of saying, "No, this is about business above all for my vote," and not necessarily agreeing with Donald Sterling, but not agreeing with the precedent it might send. And I could see that. I don't think it's likely, but I could see it.
It's weird because, you know, people are going to say that Cuban's like looking out for his own self-interest. I honestly don't think that. Cuban's entire thing, he's been pretty reasonable in the past about this. I think his entire position is pretty much, if I say something stupid enough to get me in that level of trouble, that's on me. But I think this for him is, it really is a philosophical bent where we have established rules and regulations that we enter into when we're owners. And you can't violate that no matter what the context is. Otherwise, there's no point in having the Constitution and bylaws. It plays into a very real political debate that goes on every single day, and he's kind of translating that. This is also a guy who literally developed an application to allow you to send messages with no trace. So this hits kind of home for him, and he's also – I love the fact that he's using it as a way to promote it a little bit. Like, he's not doing it outright. He's just dropping little things like, oh, by the way, if you don't want to get busted.
Oh, my God. Yeah, it's just it's a weird thing. I talked about this either with Ethan or with Dan, but I've kind of gotten to the place where, like, I'm hoping for that Disney movie moment where the Clippers rally, they win the championship, and Donald Sterling isn't there to accept the trophy, you know? And sure, he still profits off it in some way if they can't, you know, depending on how quickly this process goes, and they're doing that conference call with the 10 person committee today. But there is this weird thing where, like, I do kind of want that to happen just because I think it would be a cool moment. It's a cool narrative.
Yeah. We have these two things. There's a clash coming tonight of competing narratives, which is monstrous. The Clippers are playing behind what's going on with Doc and everything and this entire situation and how emotional this has been for them and what it means for them as players, for many of them as African-American or black citizens in this country, for members of the NBA and the NBPA. And on the other side of it, you have the Warriors who are effectively playing for Mark Jackson's job.
Yeah, and I mean, the players on that team do believe in him, right? Like, I wouldn't say they're happy with the coaching,
but the situation has gone so far beyond bizarre.
It's just always weird how, like, I just feel like I've always felt like work is supposed to be work, right? Like, it's just work is supposed to be as freeing a situation as possible. I know that's naive, but, like, it just feels like, no, you go do your job and you get the hell out of the way and then you go home and do whatever. Like, that's what your work is. But there is always just so much drama to any situation that's clearly, like, not that definitely includes the NBA and coaching, but it's just so weird to me that there's so much drama. Like, I get it's high stakes and job security is not there, and they're not securing him despite having, you know, their most successful 2-year run in you know, 20, 25 years. But it's weird. It's just weird that, like, in the midst of all of this, there's this insecurity shining through with the coach that is causing all of these rifts within the organization that is just adding a narrative that seems unnecessary to me.
Does the stuff with Ehrman confuse you as much as it does me?
I have a little bit of clarity on it. That I can't talk about.
Sure.
But yeah, no, on the surface, like, it's very weird and it's very confusing. And the entire situation, like, you know, we've got now 3 assistants in the last year or so that reportedly have had these odd problems with Mark Jackson, and some of that is probably their own tactics, and some of that is, like, that dude seems afraid of losing his job, which is fine. That's fine. You don't. Nobody wants to lose their job, right? But he just seems so insecure in his comment. Like, when he's saying, "No one thought we could be here," and stuff. Like, you're right. You're right. Nobody thought you'd be in the 6th seed. They thought you'd be in the 4. Like, you're right. No one thought that. Like, he seems to create, like, these us against the world mentalities with things that don't exist, you know, in the media. And then on top of that, like, it doesn't shock me that he would do that within his own day-to-day dealings as a coach.
It's a bizarre situation. The Scalabrine thing, trying to fire him in front of the coaches or the players reportedly, and then being told effectively he can't. So reassigning him, and then Ehrman records these conversations. And then here's the thing. That sounds really bad, and you don't talk about what you know, but I'm just like, the Celtics heard his side of the story and was like, oh, that sounds reasonable. Come on board.
Right. Just think about that. He had no problem getting a job within, like, what, a month?
Yeah. He got fired for illegally taping conversations with other coaches.
And the Celtics were like,
sounds reasonable.
And the Celtics, who appear to be becoming a very progressive organization, like, not that they weren't before, but, like, they're really going into, like, this, you know, this Brad Stevens culture and everything they have with, like, Mike Zarin, and like, this is a forward thinking front office, right? And unless you're thinking about the draft and then they pretend to not like the draft. But other than that, like, this is a forward thinking organization, and they're saying, oh, what did you do? Oh, that's fine. Come aboard. We understand.
And that's not even from the perspective of, man, this is weird for the Celtics. It just makes you wonder what his side of the story is and what it says about the Warriors. Like,
right.
I have never seen such a good, dysfunctional team at this level. Like, dysfunctional and this good.
And you have to fire him because he's illegally recording conversations, right? Like, you have to do that. But at the same time, like, I wonder how much of that was just, all right, we have this policy and he's violated it and so he's got to go. And how much of it is how much they wanted to do it.
Yeah, and
I get the feeling they didn't want to do it.
And meanwhile, I don't know how to – okay. They lost – the Warriors won game one with Blake Griffin with only playing 19 minutes. And then they win game
four? Yeah, after the Sterling stuff.
Yeah, they win game 4 on the back of the Sterling stuff. How much weird stuff is going to happen that's going to result in the Warriors – like, this is a – every, and this happened last year where, like, Kenneth Faried is targeting Stephen Curry and Andre Iguodala's the mole, and, like, all this weird stuff happens with the Warriors. I thought they were just going to be a good team, but they're somehow weirder than they were under Nelly. How is that possible?
Yeah, Don Nelson would be a calming influence on the organization right now.
Think about that! Think about that. Yeah. So I don't know. And that's
the crazy thing is that they're missing, you know, one of the best defensive centers in the league, and they still have a chance at this thing. They have a legitimate chance to win the series. I don't know that it's going to happen or that I would pick it to happen, but if they win game 6 tonight, like, you got Steph Curry. You'd never know what's going to happen in a game 7, whether it's on the road or at home.
Yeah. And meanwhile, I will say, wouldn't it be weird, though, we've had this crazy, crazy, crazy first round, and then, you know, Spurs have kind of righted themselves. They were a game away from advancing. Thunder win tonight, and they've got a game seven at home. They're in position to advance. The Rockets only have to win one game in Portland to get back to Houston for a game seven.
Yeah.
Like, it's we could have complete chaos, or we could, or it's very possible that this thing could wind up being the most entertaining first round series that we can remember that winds up somehow going chalk.
It's like you could like have a tornado run through a city and not damage an entire, like not damage a single thing.
Right?
Like it's this weird of like, oh my god, look at all this chaos. Oh, everything's fine.
It's like the tornado picks up everything in town and then drops it right back where it was.
Right. And leaves it clean.
Yeah, it's just it makes no sense. Now you got to think there're going to be casualties. Like, I don't know how anybody can believe the Pacers are going to win two games. I just don't know how you can when you look at the course of the series and yeah. what's been going on, and especially how much in their head they are. I don't know. I guess we have three elimination games tonight. Does anyone get eliminated tonight?
Yes. I'm going to pick the Clippers to win. That one I feel good about, which will probably be a hilarious thing for people to listen to after the game and then kill me about on Twitter. But I do feel like the Clippers are going to win.
I've taken Hawks, because the Hawks are in the same position that the Rockets were going into last night, which is you have to prove to me you're not drunk until I take you.
Right. I will say this about the Pacers is they've bounced back from each loss so far in the series. Now, that's a very small sample, but they lost game one. They ended up killing in game two. They lost game three. They ended up surviving game four. You know, they lose game five. You know, that's the frustrating thing about this. It's like, they should win this game. There's no, even on the road, there's no reason, like, Atlanta doesn't really have a home court advantage. Like, there's no reason for Indiana to lose this game. And yet.
and yet we've said that now three times.
Right, and yet it feels like they probably will.
Yeah. This is like the homeless man's version, not even homeless. This is kind of the Paramecium level version of last year's finals, right? Each team wins a game.
Yeah.
Going back and forth?
Yeah.
Only in, I guess maybe in this one it's going to be Atlanta, I guess, yeah, it'd be Atlanta gets the offensive rebound and then misses the game-winning jumper.
Right.
Would be the version of this. I think the Thunder win.
I do too. I think the Thunder win. But I don't know. Actually, I don't know. I have no idea.
I can't imagine a scenario. Sometimes I just get back to face level on these things and I say, I can't imagine a scenario in which Memphis beats a healthy Thunder team. Yeah. I on the surface, I can't see this. Now, I also said I can't see a scenario in which the Washington Wizards close out the Chicago Bulls on their home floor. And that happened. So it's, you know, I like the Warriors tonight. Just because regardless of how they played at Oracle the rest of the year, they seem to have found the right groove. They've played exceptionally well in that building. So,
yeah, yeah.
I mean, they got toppled in game three, but – and I'm also worried that there's going to be an emotional letdown after the rise of game four or five for the Clippers.
Yeah, there could be. I mean, that's the thing. It's like, oh, well, now this – like. Now the Sterling, you know, Sterling's been banned. They should be fine. Well, not necessarily. Like those are some serious emotions to handle, and they don't just go away because you won Game Five.
And the whistle determines a lot in the series.
Absolutely, absolutely.
If Draymond picks up three in the first half, the Warriors are screwed. If Blake picks up three in the first half, the Clippers are screwed. That's honestly what it comes down to is which one of Blake Griffin and Draymond Green is going to be in foul trouble.
Which Warriors player?
How do we accurately rate Draymond Green?
I have no idea. Which Warriors player picks up three fouls in the first quarter? Because that seems to be a thing now. I do like Mark Jackson saying like bucking that trend of, oh, guy picked up two fouls, we got to take him out. Like, I do like that because I do believe in the theory of, no, you got to trust your guy. Now, you know, maybe you take him out in the first quarter once he picks up two and you bring him back early in the second. But I don't mind that strategy because I do think you can kind of get in your own way over coaching that situation. But it's funny that in spite of that, like, it's just happened a lot in the series.
Steph Curry needs to not pass the ball tonight.
It drives me that overhand pass does not work against this Clippers team.
or anyone, really.
Yeah, I mean, it's a sloppy pass, and instead of doing that, I'd like to see more patience out of him and getting to the basket or circling around for a jumper.
He just needs to launch. He needs to take take the missile guidance system off and just free fire. He needs to just launch. He needs to be pushing the ball in transition and going for those quick mid-transition before the defense can get set. Surely you're not going to shoot it from there, shots. He just needs to bomb.
Yeah.
Like, they'll get enough from Clay. They'll get enough from David Lee. They'll get enough points from Draymond Green on buckets. They'll find offense around the rest of it. But Curry is going to have a night where he shoots like Steph Curry.
Curry's got to be great, and I think Clay Thompson's got to have 5 made threes. Like, they really do have to become perimeter-oriented, and the Clippers have done a good job of taking that away in most of the games, but they've got it. Like, you got to find a way to get Steph space.
Yeah, just let's challenge DeAndre Jordan down low ain't working.
No, I would stop that.
DJ has found himself. How great has that been to watch Jordan become this?
He's been great, and you know, part of that is the fact that they don't really have anybody to throw at him with no Bogut, but he's still doing the work. He's still making the plays. He's still having that impact. I love it.
I wish we could have seen this with Bogut.
Yeah, that just sucks. Like, it does. Like, regardless of what ends up happening in the series, it just would have been so much better with Bogut.
Like, we were looking to have used more Bogut, less racism in the series. That's the formula that we could have used.
That's a weird strategy. It's just crazy enough to work, though.
Oh, okay. Are we done? We got everything? Oh, draft. Have anybody moved up or down in your mind lately?
I know. Well, the Harrison twins went back to Kentucky, right?
Yeah.
I got to see the list again because I feel like guys have moved up, but I think it's just because some guys are staying, and I don't really understand. I mean, how many guys does Kentucky have coming back? Is Cauley Stein staying?
Yeah.
Yeah. See, like that screws up a lot of the draft just with those three guys.
Yeah, that guy. He's coming back, and Poitras is coming back. And the twins.
Yeah, Poitras said, I mean, I don't know what to do with him at this point.
They're going to be like 10 deep.
Yeah. Yeah, they're going to be crazy. I just, like, really the thing for me to watch right now is just what happens with Embiid's, you know, physicals. Like, that's just going to determine so much of how this draft goes.
What do you think of DeAndre Daniels?
I like him.
Hot take. Nice.
I don't know. Like I gotta see more. Like I
went back and looked at him. I'm pretty impressed with him. I like him. I'm not sure. I think he might, like, the highest thing he would go is like late first if somebody took a reach, but I like him a lot, actually. I think he's got, I mean, his, I have to look at his wingspan, but it's something absurd.
Yeah, I mean, he's long. He had a great tournament. It just worries me, like, we weren't talking about him before the tournament run.
Yeah, now we are.
And that always worked. Like, I just have to go back because I never really noticed him. Like, I just didn't. Like, he wasn't a guy that stood out. And so now I've got to go back and see, like, all right, well, what did he do this year? Like, from what I saw and what I remember, I like him. But I don't know how much of that is just confirmation bias.
I'm really surprised that Spencer Dinwiddie out of Colorado jumped.
Yeah, I mean, the knee injury. Like, I didn't expect that. And then Mitch McGarry jumping, too, with the back injury.
Yeah.
I didn't expect that at all.
And then on the other one, Montrezl Harrell, come to us, come see us. You can't, don't waste your time.
Yeah, that's
You're
another
so
one.
Ready. That, come on, man.
That screws up the that late part of the lottery quite a bit. Like, maybe I even think, like, with good workouts, he could have become a top 10 pick. I love him. He's a man.
I had him going 16 to the Bulls, and it was perfect in every regard.
Oh, that'd be so great.
Can you imagine what Tibbs would do with Harrell? A front line of Harrell and Gibson?
Oh, my God. That would be fantastic.
Screw you, college players, messing up my mocks.
Yeah, screw you with your priorities and your wanting to learns.
Oh, one more thing. The Magic reportedly are really big on Exum.
Yeah.
I wouldn't touch him if I'm not the Lakers. I'm too worried about him making a jump.
That I agree with, but I love the idea of, I don't know who's the point guard and who's the shooting guard in that situation, but I love the idea of a defensive wrecking crew in the backcourt with Oladipo and Exum.
Yeah, that's a really great combo. I do have to admit, like, if I was a GM, I'd be like, oh, who is this? Rob Pelinka? Nope, 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 nope. Like Rob, good guy, not gonna do it. Nope,
right.
No thanks. Thanks, Zach.
Thanks, Matt.